extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kalen Carr. Get that drink of water, Dave. You're going to have time to fill. So much time. You know why? Matt Doyle is on vacation, and I can't complain about it. I can't say a single word about that after I went and just flew the coop last week and let you guys handle this on your own. So be ready. Be prepared. I'm going to lean on you.
It's actually less work for me because you were out, so I hosted last week. And listen, I can do – wait, ready? Are you kidding me that you don't have three center backs playing in a 3-5-2 coming out of a 4-4-1 with the Trequarista – it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's why Nico Lodero is a great player.
Bingo. Doyle's basically on this show. Gonzalo, Federico, it's all the same here. We just interchangeable, man. Interchangeable. And before we get going, we have a great show today, by the way. The Narrative Fun Zone is back. I heard Anders tried to keep it going without me last week, which is, that's not fair. That's not right. Cincinnati and Chicago are in the win column. My Chicago Fire won a game, so we got that to talk about. We'll talk about the second-best team in the league, the second-best team in the West. LAFC is back. We know you don't want us to talk about them. We're still going to do it, but we need this one thing before we start. We need the men's league update from Kalen Carr. How was men's league this weekend, Kalen? How'd you do? Scored any goals?
He just went,
How are your Achilles?
Not good, not good. Yeah, we've done – I did my ankle. I did my hamstring. It was a classic weekend. Lost both games. We're in a tough patch right now.
Oh, hope you got a couple beers
is there
afterwards.
Questions around the manager, or is the club sticking together?
You know, Andre Akpan, he's been nursing an injury, and so he came out to manage the game. But I'm not saying his tactics were wrong, but didn't work.
It sounds like maybe think back to those golden years at Toronto. Who's Jovinko? Who's Josie? Who's calling out the medical staff? Who's saying my hamstring would be good if these guys were just massaging it that little bit better? We shall see.
Is the next generation pushing through? Is that the problem?
Yeah, that's
a
problem.
You guys the has-beens now?
Let's go. We're losing listenership by the second here. Come on.
Okay. All right. Hey, be sure to check out here, by the way, an additional pod this week. We have Club and Country coming out. We had Zach Steffen,
awesome.
Charlie Davies. Made sure to hook us up with this boy. We had a great conversation with Zach about everything Man City, the U.S. national team, what they're trying to do this summer and beyond. I'll just give you a little hint. Yeah, they want to win the World Cup. This isn't a Klinsmann zone spin thing where they're going to say, we couldn't even do it anyway. No, they want to go out and win things. We'll see if they can do that. And, of course, all those inside stories from Man City are really interesting. So on Wednesday, we'll drop that. You can read Matt Doyle's Sunday night column. The Armchair Analyst is out. So always check that out. I always read it every single week. It's the best way to keep up on the league if you can't watch every single game. The Call-Up has Brian Ching. That drops on Tuesday. So go subscribe, listen to our sister podcast. And, of course, you can always check out Steve Zakuani's Saturday Takeaways column. And Kalen, we have our Twitter spaces.
Oh, yeah, that's the best part of the week. But yeah. Kalen, how hurt will you be if Brian Ching mentioned you zero times in that interview?
I mean, if I don't get a producer cred on that on that guest appearance, I don't know what. Chingy, I need a part of that transfer fee to the Call-Up.
We will talk to them about that. I don't know if you can get the solidarity payments as well. Spaces on Tuesday. Power Ranking Show, 11 a.m. Eastern. Doyle is off, so it's Dave and I just rapping, going back and forth. We've already talked to Daniel Slayton about coming on to talk Quakes. Patrice Bernier has been hitting me up. We've got to have him. We will get a good guest list for you. It's basically Drive Time Radio talking MLS for about 2 hours on Tuesdays at 11 Eastern. We're doing it on the @MLS handle now, so it's a little bit easier for you to find and to follow. But I'll throw out the guest list on Twitter as well. But join us at 11 a.m. Eastern, and then the top 10 goes on YouTube. So if you want to catch your team, if they're outside the top 10, you got to listen to it live. All right, let's get to it right now. First, we start with our Extra Time Fantasy League winner. It is Loon Juice. The Loons were on a bye. So generic fantasy team name, and Los Troncos all put up 114 points. Good job. That was better than all of us. Obviously, three-way tie at the top. Make sure you get your team in at the right time. I have been bad about that recently. So it's a good reminder for me. And let's get to our celebrating soccer moment of the weekend presented by Continental Tire. It is a league where there are beautiful, incredible goals. Maybe you saw Alan Pulido. Maybe Lucas El Arayan wowed you with two free kicks. Maybe you just were blinking your eyes incredulously as Romo Kyoto missed from a near impossible spot to miss from. And I have this question for you as someone who covered the Kai Kamara miss in person, witnessed that at Community America Ballpark. What is the worst miss, Romel Quioto or Kai Kamara? What do you guys got? I have a clear opinion on this one, but I'd be curious to hear what you think. Kaylin, you're a professional soccer player. You understand technically what it takes to put the ball in the back of the net in one of these games. What is your opinion? Worst miss, Romel Quioto from point blank range with the left foot outside the post against FC Cincinnati, helping them to their first win, or Kai Kamara in Kansas City Wizards regalia, somehow finding a way on the goal line to handball it in.
The handball was unexpected. You're not thinking that that's going to end up that way, and you almost had to look back to see that one. I think the Kyoto miss is definitely the one, though.
No. How? The ball, explain.
The Kai one is in the air. The ball's in the air, and
more
it's
stuff's
spinning,
going on. Yeah.
And also, you're playing in a baseball Comerica Park. I don't know.
Comerica? Yeah. Boy, you're going to the south side of Chicago right now. I appreciate that.
I think the Kyoto one was worse. It looks like he wanted to take it on his right, but he ends up getting his feet right. And it's past the goalkeeper. It's right there. Oh, that one was rough.
I agree with
Kaylin. I've seen misses like that though, but I think the Kai one, there was a lot more happening. There was more in play. It was right there. It was on the line. That was the hard part. But
if the ball's on the ground and it's rolling flat, yeah, then it's unacceptable. The one with Kai, there's things going on. It's bad. He makes it worse, as you said, by handballing it. But Kyoto, come on, dude. You're literally watching it come through because you know what happened was he's already celebrating in his head. He's already wheeled away doing his thing and was like, it's a tap-in. It happens a little bit faster than a normal, like, Adam Buxa's tap-in or finish against the Red Bulls. And he just doesn't take care of business. The worst miss I've ever seen, by the way, Mario Gomez, 2008 European Championships with Germany. Go watch that one. Straight up an open goal, and he clips it over the top. Unreal.
I'm right now, some self-examination is going on because I didn't even think this was a conversation. It was just an opportunity for me to remember the Kai Kamara miss. But you guys are right. There is an element of, like, the technical side of this is the ball's flat on the ground. He can see it coming in. He has an open goal. He just has to put it on frame. Now, Kai, look, it's almost impossible to miss from the angle that Kai is because the ball is literally on the goal line. But it is bobbling. It is jumping up and down. But here's what I will say about that. Multiple years, Community America Ballpark got voted the best pitch in Major League Soccer. So you can't blame the pitch on that one. And he whiffs
standing
it.
Standing up for the pitch.
Exactly. And Kai whiffs it. He is looking at a ball sitting on the goal line. He swings his leg. At least Romel got the ball with his foot.
There, like, was contact. Yeah, more contact for sure on the Kyoto one.
Kai made contact. It was with his hand.
That's true. And the ball went in the back of the net for Kai. So maybe it is Romel's. Let us know what you think. This is one of those moments when you celebrate soccer where you have to celebrate both sides. There's so much beauty in the sport. But as Kaylin can probably attest in men's league, sometimes you have to celebrate the moments in which you miss. Sometimes it doesn't go your way, and it's just about, you know, shrugging and moving on to the next one.
There's nothing more beautiful than humanity, and humanity is flawed.
Exactly.
Therefore, celebrating soccer is flawed at times as well.
Put a bow on it. Well done. Well done. Welcome to the Narrative Fun Zone. Here we go.
Really mean, guys. I'm super deep.
Yeah. Eric Williamson on this show. Great interview. I got to go back and listen to that one, but I've gotten the full vote of approval from Anders, and I trust his judgment in the quality of content on Extra Time. He said this was going to be a statement game for the Portland Timbers against the LA Galaxy, and they made a statement. They smacked the Galaxy down 3-0. Now, Derek Williams made a statement, which was, I don't want to be on the field anymore. I don't know if he intended that, but that was the end result. If you haven't seen this tackle, it's awful. Andy Pohl, all of our thoughts go to him. Hopefully he is okay and is able to come back from this one. This was a really ugly tackle. But in the end, it's 3-0 Portland, and they may be sixth in the Western Conference, but they've shown a lot in this first 2 months or so of the season, I think. Namely, that they can sort of handle multiple fronts, and they have all this incredible depth that has been tested to its core. We still don't know what this team can be because we haven't seen Sebastian Blanco, but I look at them and I think maybe they're one of the best teams in the league, and not just based on this result.
Yeah, I think Eric Williamson said it. They have too much talent. They should be competing for a title. He's right. He's a big part of that now, where they have flexibility that didn't exist before because of what he can do in midfield, now covering for Diego Chara. Last week, stepping back in as the eight, going end-to-end, ability to step forward, I think, and create a little bit more if that's the way they go, if Valeri's out and Blanco's out, whatever it is. I would say in this one, it feels silly to say, oh, you beat a team that you were at home against, man up, for 70 minutes or whatever it was, 45 minutes against. But this is actually the type of game the Timbers have struggled with in the past. Yeah. When teams are like, well, we can't attack and sit deep, they've often just whipped in crosses. So you saw the quality of Van Rinken, which is unique. Bravo as well, stepping forward, counter-pressing, creating opportunities. And then I think a lot of the quality in the attack that didn't exist before. Yimi Chara, what Williamson has brought, even Felipe Mora getting the goals this game. So I think on top of all the things we've seen from the Timbers this year, this was actually a big result for them, not just for the 3-0, get yourself closer to the Galaxy, move up the Western Conference standings, but showing that this team has more elements to them than they have in the past.
Galaxy on 12 points right now, third place. Portland on 9. The standings say one thing, but in my heart, even though I have my shrine sitting over here, my heart says the Timbers are a better team, Kalen.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think they have a lot more depth right now. The Galaxy has depth, but it's a lot of young pieces that are still kind of finding their sort of footing. Williams on the tackle. I mean, first of all, I hope Polo's okay. It looked awful, and you don't know how. I mean, I think he had like a leg brace and had to get help off the field. The tackle was awful, so I'm sort of wondering what type of suspension we might see from this. But I think that's something that that physicality is something that Williams has brought at times throughout the season and has actually really helped the team. Yeah. He just went over the line in this case.
What do you think happened on this one? Because was it just like rush of blood? Was it mistiming? He'd had a couple moments before. He'd also kind of, he'd been in a weird spot. Like,
it felt like a brain fart to me.
That's what it felt like too. He just completely mistimed everything, and you leave, and you're like, oh god, this is not good, and I didn't mean to do this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was ugly. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. And he's timed his tackles. He's physical. He's timed his tackles well throughout the season. So
it led to a goal.
That,
yeah,
I can't say that it's like he's just out for trying to take people out, but he got this one terribly wrong. And then I give Portland credit because they kind of stayed patient, they stayed the course. Mora came in, showed his quality too, stepped in for Polo. Bobasi was back in the lineup as well, so you're starting to see Portland getting a little bit healthier, and in the absence of guys, you've seen even other guys take, much like Williamson, take a bigger role on so far this season. And then of course Valeri steps up as he does. And so I'm interested to see, especially when Blanco comes back. Like, this is in the good moments for Portland, we've seen them really good. Like some moments in Champions League, and then that kind of slowed things down, and it was just injury after injury after injury. But if this team gets healthy and gets going, they can do some damage in the West.
Feels like there's some level ups for them. Obviously coming, one being Blanco, Nijgoda being another one, Bobasi being full fitness being another one, having some
Luis Mabiala,
some coherency in the back, another one. So this is a question from Isaac on Twitter for us. I think it's a good one at this point. I think we can all accept and acknowledge that despite drawing 1-1 in Seattle this weekend, that the Sounders are the best team in the league. The points say that, the eye test says that, the performances, the squad says that. But Isaac asks, following Portland smackdown of the Galaxy, who is the second best team in the West right now? Who's second best? Because Kansas City on points are second best. They go to San Jose and beat San Jose, but that's three straight teams that have gone to San Jose and beaten San Jose. Like, it's feast or famine for the Quakes, and right now we're in a famine zone. Galaxy are second. They've been the story of the year, but we also know they're flawed. Houston are fourth. Shout out to Dynamo, knocking off Vancouver this weekend. Tim Parker.
Get no respect.
Tim Parker, before we go on, can we just talk about Tim Parker coming out there and kind of taking a shot at MDS a little bit?
Yeah.
He was, Mark Dos Santos was like, after this game, we're going to be right up there. After this game, we're going to be in the middle of the pack in the West. And Tim Parker's like, and I took that personally. Hit us with the Jordan meme. The Rapids, despite losing to the Galaxy, fifth. Portland there at sixth. And San Jose. Who is the second best team in the West?
I think this is going to be a conversation all season. And this is sort of how I felt going into putting together my preseason standings. Was like, I think there's a lot of quality and there's holes in most of these teams. I feel pretty comfortable saying it's SKC. Even with the issues they have at center back, I think Pulido is getting into form, and even if he's not, he's still a great chance creator for this team. They've got options in the center. Shallowy's starting to get goals, and if it's not him, they've got options there as well. Jalen Lindsay and Graham Zusi, that gives you a little bit of depth at fullback now that they didn't have. There's still a massive question mark at center back, but go down the list that you just said. There's question marks on scoring for Houston. There's question marks across the field for the Galaxy. I really like the Rapids. I was really excited for this game against LAFC. It was a little bit of a flat performance. I put some of that on Robin Fraser. The way they came out in this game was sort of, let's stick in this game for a little while and then take it to them, rather than the aggression we've seen the last 2 weeks, or at least for a game and a half in Colorado. So I don't feel great about any of these teams, but I still think SKC overall quality as well as performances right now, that's my second best team in the West.
I'm going to go with a name that you didn't even mention and is probably going to make some people frustrated or angry.
Stop.
And
he's getting the fishing pole out to get to the bottom of the standings.
LAFC. It's LAFC. We see Vela coming back into the team. We see Rossi coming back into form. And we see what they can do. And I still don't think they've hit their best level yet. They're only, what, 3 points off of Houston at like fourth right now, or 5 points off the Galaxy, or 4 points off the Galaxy.
Yeah.
So that's literally, we're looking at the table right now.
Lost to head to head.
Yeah, sure. But like, look at who was, look at who was playing, who wasn't. So, you know, with no Carlos Vela, to me, that's like, that has an asterisk on it. And credit the Galaxy. They deserve everything they got from the game, and they deserve everything where they are on the table right now. But when you're looking through the teams on the Western Conference, I still think LAFC, after Seattle, is the second best team, just based on when they're flying and the way they move the ball. And we saw a peak of it just this weekend against Colorado again, where you get driving. I actually think Corey Baird has fit in quite well there, being able to, he finds that nice little slip pass into Rossi. And my question with him as the nine is, could he play a part in that system where he can, like, it's tight and they're playing the ball in tight spaces? Can he find those little passes? But he's got a couple goals. He's got a couple assists at this point. And we haven't necessarily seen, you know, his wingers in top form yet. So I like the way this team is going to find their form. And we're just starting to see a peek at that.
Real quick on LAFC. What I take away from the weekend is, when you have Carlos Vela and he can run at people, it's almost impossible to defend them in that final third when he or Atuesta has space.
Yeah. Because the second, is a perfect example, yes, of how, when Bob talks about getting Carlos on the move, when he's stationary and when he receives the ball to feet, that's generally where teams can start to kind of bully him or get around him, or try to at least. But there's just, it's a small pass from Blackman. But he just sort of waits a second extra, and Carlos sort of makes that outside to in run and just gets on the inside shoulder. And once he's got that shoulder on you, you know, with the ball, you're not going to be able to body him off. He's just got great balance. And then he picks the nice little pass in with Rosenberry, just a little bit out of position. And Rossi, just, you know, great shot. Near, hits it at the near post, but quick release and catches him off guard. But Vela, when he's moving, when he's receiving the ball, it's he is on the run. Unbelievable.
We just haven't seen enough of it. And I love that you brought that up, because Blackman understands it too. You can see him kind of have that, like, he has that little step where it's like, okay, hey, draw the defender in. I'm playing this ball. No, Carlos, I know where you're going. You're coming inside. Here's the slip pass. Off we go. To me, with LAFC, it's all like, you have him, you have Rossi, you have Baird. And then it's all sort of designed to get the defense moving to allow Diego Rossi to have that sort of back shoulder run, where he understands the timing and space so well. I mean, obviously, we've seen it with the amount of goals he scored. But to understand, okay, here's how it's unbalanced. Here's where I'm going. I'm on the back shoulder. Timing is now. Atuesta plays the ball. Here's Baird. He cuts inside. And they're all looking for Rossi. Vela's goals will come. His assists, they come easy to him, but his goals will come as he gets fit over time and is a little bit more explosive, and these movements start unbalancing teams even more. But I think Diego Rossi understands so well when and how he's going to get space in behind, and he doesn't have to be like beat players 1v1. He doesn't have to be the guy that receives with his back to goal and finds the pass. He just has to be direct, and he's become so good with that first touch to set himself up and then the ball in. Look, I picked it. The LAFC across the board. I doubted it. I'm still not going to go all the way with Jesus, you and man. Say can't, and say them second. I know. But it's the Timbers. I think it's the Timbers. Because when I think of best, I think of whose level, because it's all about getting to that level, unless you're just like Shield or nothing, whose level has the most potential to rise. And to me, their growth can be exponential, whereas I'm not sure, other than LAFC because of Carlos Vela, any of the other teams in the West have that potential to make a huge jump. Does that make sense? To just
sort
go from
of,
like
not every team
good
has to, make a huge
to great.
Jump. but other the teams that are ahead of them don't have to make a huge jump, I would say. With Portland, listen, I get it, but everyone told us Sebastian Blanco would be back for CCL. Then he'd be back for MLS play. Now it's May 24th. I'm not saying that he's not going to come back, and I'm not saying he's not going to be good when he is, but this guy's now been off a year or whatever it's been, 10 months, and at some point he does have to come back and be effective for them for us to count him in. And then at the same time, across the back line, I know that I said SKC and they have question marks. I'm not going into a battle with Zuparic and Tui Loma as my center backs. I don't even know if I'd go in with Zuparic and Laris Mabiala. Mabiala's done some good stuff, but not as the leader of a partnership. I don't trust Zuparic 1v1 defending. And Bravo in three big games gave up three penalty kicks or whatever it was for unnecessary tackles. So there's question marks for all these teams, not even talking about goalkeeper, which I sort of give Portland a pass for because then you can do about five injuries at one position. It's a good team. There's a ton of talent. I get what you're saying. When everyone's healthy and fit, there's a chance that this could be one of the most talented rosters in MLS. But you can't just go there right now and say they're currently the second best team in the Western Conference.
No, that's fair. I'm projecting. This is like, you know, it's like a stock. I'm like, look, there's a it's not a penny stock right now. I'm like, this is a good buy. Like, buy this stock. You're going to double your money down the line. Yeah, I don't think Houston's in that conversation. But, Kalen, this is your opportunity to give some daps right here. Like, for Tab Ramos, even just through seven games, like, they played more games than three of the other teams in the playoff field. And Salt Lake's only played five games at this point. But for Tab, just to have them here, that was the step that they were supposed to take this year. It's like, okay, last year we weren't good, but we were building something. This year, the project's taken a step forward. We might not make the playoffs. I'm not going to sit here and say that the Dynamo are going to be in the playoffs. But we have pride in what we're able to do, and we get some results in moments that, you know, look, Vancouver, say what you will about the Whitecaps. It's a game Houston should win. They go out and win it. They do it.
Yeah, and they've been able to win some tight games as well too, which is something where I've haven't felt the Dynamo could necessarily win those. And I like some of the moves that Tab has made. I mean, he's brought Memo back into more of like a 10 role where he's been used on the wing at times, and I like him a little bit better in that closer to the middle of the pitch. I just think he has, you know, he can spring Fafa and he can spring Arudi on the wings. And then also you see in this one kind of those late arriving runs into the box, I think is where he really sort of has a good knack for the goal. And then, yeah, I like the moves that they've made with the experience in the back. And but then also, yeah, Pasher on the left has been a good find for them as well. And Arudi, you know, when he's on, he's dangerous. He create, like, say what you will, but him and Fafa, they cause problems. They turn people around, and they are a threat, and they fit well into the system and the style, the heat. They can handle all that. So I've been impressed with the Dynamo. I picked them to be in the playoffs just sort of, I think, just barely. But they've gotten off to a good start so far, and I think there's at least a path forward for them. And I think some of those, they didn't go out and spend big money, and I would still like to see, and, you know, maybe eventually they go out into the market and be a little bit more aggressive, but the moves that they've made so far in the offseason, you have to say, each Joe Corona, like, you go man for man and the moves they've brought in, and you're like, okay, wow, this has definitely improved the side already. So,
one of the true MLS experiences is the Maxi Arruti experience. You got to get on the ride. You got to go through all of it. There's moments, there's screamers. Everyone's doing bow and arrows. Everyone's a fan. Then you fall off. Then you come back on for a little. And then it ends poorly. He gets traded and he comes back and scores against you a few months later. The Maxi Arruti experience. That's MLS 101 right there.
It's like a roller coaster where you go through the tunnel and you're like, this could be like the kiddie ride. Nothing could happen here. Or this could be terrifying. Like, we could go through the whole thing, do like five loop-de-loops, and then do the whole thing backwards. You just have no idea. There's a beauty to it. But all of those signings, to me, spoke to who they wanted to be and that they are being that team. That's a huge step forward for the Dynamo.
We talked about it like week one, week two. They're one of the most cohesive units in the league right now. They're not the most talented. And they play hard and they play as a group and they know exactly what they want to do in games. What's exciting, I think, for a fan base is when you have – you know, stretches like this, you can then look at it and say, well, we don't just need a talent upgrade. There's a few specific spots we need. And so you move away from, no offense, the FC Cincinnati thing, which is, we're not good enough, let's go find talented players, to know exactly what they need is a left center back and probably someone goal dangerous in that front three. And it could probably fit anywhere because you've got versatile pieces already in this team, which puts you at an advantage to say, okay, when you are looking in the market, it's not just for talent. It's not just to get better. it is specifically for guys who can fit this system at those positions. And hopefully Houston's able to get that done over the course of this season, because if they do that, I mean, we heard the rumors about Ake Lobo, which we brought up last show, the center forward out of Liga MX. We've heard the rumors about Carlos Salcedo as well. That sounds like a lot of money at center back. Whatever it is, this team could be a contender. They could be really fun over the next few years if they get those two right.
Yeah, they signed a, young DP, Mateo Bajamic, and I haven't even seen him really.
Yeah, so. Because he's at spring training. He's at spring practice. That dude looks like an NFL player. He is massive.
Now I'm looking forward to Bajamic hitting the field. All right, look, that's the West. 401-206-0 MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. If you are a supporter of a team in the West, you're like, you guys are completely off, or here's my opinion, we'd love to hear it. But I do think number two squarely belongs to the Rebs. Knock off the Red Bulls 3-1 this week. The Red Bulls have looked pretty decent. And then Carlos Hill signs a contract extension. So you go back. That was an incredible signing in the first place. Now you extend him, and you have Bruce, and you're building. You keep moving forward. The Rebs are the second-best team in the league. Let's just say it. The Revs are the second best team in the league. What do you like about them, Dave? What about this team is makes them sort of a lock in that position? Because in our pre-show meeting, you were like, we don't even need to have the conversation overall. It's just the Revs.
Yeah, well, they have one of the best back lines in the league. And John Bell now three straight starts. I think they've given up two goals combined in those three games. So it's not just Henry Kessler and Farrell. It is that entire defensive unit. They've got depth at fullback, Matt Turner in goal, and then Carlos Hill. And that's why this signing's awesome. Because this puts them competitive for the rest of the time he's in this league. Like, he is that good now. He is in that Ladero, I guess Pasuelo, Zelarayan's clearly in that conversation of if he's on the field, this team has a chance to win. And he has an ability to make that happen. And so he's going to be able to do that for the next 4 or 5 years in this jersey, as my TFC jersey falls back there. Because I didn't mention Pasuelo, I think.
You did mention Pasuelo. Oh, but okay. Then it was like, oh, but he's like, I'm not playing right now. Yeah, so I'm going to fall off the wall. By the way, can we just say that Dave's awareness, spatial awareness here, I didn't even see him look back. Like, how would he have known? I guess he's looking at the monitor on the screen in front of us.
There was a sense in the force. But yeah, so that's what I love about this Revs team. What's been good to see this year is while the goal scoring hasn't totally hit from everyone along the front three, although I think Tejan's been good, got the goal in this game. I think he's been better. His touch is cleaner. He's more efficient when he's running at guys. It's not just, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll make it up as I go. Central midfield's gotten a lot better. Maciel's been huge, and Polster stepped in well. Tommy Mack's given them some good minutes as well. I think alongside the ability of Maciel to cover, those two can sort of find their places. So I think they're better than they were last year. They have a healthy Carlos Hill. They've improved at center back, and they still got the best goalkeeper in MLS. So they've been awesome, and they haven't played up to their level. They are first in the East. They're getting wins left and right, and they have not even, I think, scratched the surface of how good they can be.
I think they're just now figuring out sort of the way that they want to play, which, and Doyle pointed this out well in his column, should be just get Carlos Hill the ball as often as possible. Now, we do have to talk to Carlos Coronel about diving. Like, if I was Carlos Coronel, I'd dive out of the frame of this podcast. Like, what's he doing? Like, there's no angle. Tayshaun has no angle. Where are you going? Outside the goal? What are you doing?
It was a great play from Tejan. I love that. That was my favorite goal of the weekend. Because he's playing as like a right winger, but Bo drops off so much and is able to facilitate. So you need to have guys kind of fill in that space. So he kind of just improvises and goes to that left and gets one-on-one with Nealis there and just leaves him like he wasn't even, you know, in the picture. And then I thought it was pretty clever to look to the near post from that angle there and finish it. For the Red Bulls, I don't know if we're going to get to that, but center back is a problem. Like, that is a big problem for them because, I mean, look, Nealis, I think if you play him with Long, and they've tried at times, they were going to play with three center backs to start the season. Reyes just gets signed, steps in, young player, I think 21 years old. He's played a bit for Miami, but super young, and there you can tell on the bow goal where they just, you know, I think Clark and Amaya get a little confused there, lose the ball, but it's Bo is just hanging out between the two of them, and you gotta be, you know, you got the Pantera behind you. Like, it was just showed so much, just a very naive to not understand.
There's
where
5 yards between Bo and either of the center backs who are 10 yards apart in terms of holding him on side at the same time.
Straight ball
way up the field. Yeah.
It's a straight ball for, you know, an easy, easy finish there.
And then also, no offense, Gustavo Bell's not the fastest player in MLS, and Sean Nealis was nowhere close to catching
him. Well, I mean, that's the part is the, you know, Long put out a lot of those fires, right? And if you're going to press up the field, you need to have somebody that can put that out. And Nealis is not going to be able to cover. We saw again in the one-on-one situation where he gets dragged and has to go play against Buchanan, who just blows by him too. So yeah, I think he's a smart player, understands positionally maybe, but and pretty good on the ball, but not going to be able to athletically, I think, between those two to do it. And then just the inexperience when you look there too, where it's, you know, yellow card and second yellow card in the first half, and from there it's just, you know, that you can't have that against a team, especially playing against a team like New England. But the only wrinkle I'll say from Bruce's side is, you know, he's been using Books off the bench. And we had questions of, like, can you bring a DP off the bench? And how does that work? Or how do him and Bo work together? I think they've just sort of at this point said, at least for right now, we're going to go with the hotter hand. And that actually is Bo. Gustavo Bo. And then Books has been really dangerous because he's pretty pacey. And so bringing him on late in games, he can actually get on the end of things and stretch and cause problems. So it's a nice little 1-2 because they also switch the formation and go to two, like a 4-4-2 when he comes in. They play the two of them together, which I don't think worked for them as well when they tried to go with that from the start. They just didn't really have that relationship. But in transition moments, attacking with those two strikers high late in games, you saw in the end they combined there. It's been a dangerous little wrinkle for Bruce to throw at him.
Kalen, am I silly in reading into, like, Bo, it's the right play, but he went out of his way to give that to Buxa at the end? You know what I mean?
He took a touch, like, directly to goal, and I think it was just one of those where you have to pass that. Like, okay. Except, I don't know, Bo sometimes, I feel like...
I felt like if he shot, anyways, no one would have thought twice about it. They're up. They're up a man. It's Gustavo Bo. I thought that there was a moment of leadership there, of being like, I am going to make sure Buxa gets off the bench and gets this goal and do it for him, which I thought was big for the team.
It was the right choice. I don't know about leadership, but it was the right it was the right choice. And we've seen both of them at times seem a little bit selfish or individual, and that's why they haven't been paired together from the start. It just hasn't been able to work. But I thought it was the obvious pass, the right pass to make. He makes it. He finishes it. I probably should give him a little love, like, looking back to celebrate with him. But it was, those are the types of ways where you kill off games. And I Buxa coming off the bench to me has been a nice little wrinkle to, you know, it's hard not to start a player like that, but it hasn't worked from the start. So I think right now, and I wouldn't say it's going to stay this way, like, this is it forever. I think they're at a position where sometimes it might be, it might be Bo. Sometimes it might be Buxa. Other times it might be Bunbury. Like, I think he's just going to ride. They're not going to have that number nine that's going to score 10 goals. He's just going to ride the hot hand. And Bo looked good even without the goal. Like, he was good in possession. He held the ball. He facilitated. He's the best number nine they have right now.
I just want to give one last shout out to Andres Reyes because he's a young guy. I think he got really excited. He scores that opening goal. You could see how much it meant to him on the celebration. Like, he had that thing saved up. He was ready to go. And then it was just like all the blood in his body just went straight to his head. And he was like, yes, I must spike Matt Polster into this board. And then mere minutes later, he's like, yes, I must jump in two-footed on Carlos Heel. And then that was his day. I did.
It also should have been 2-0 Red Bulls at the point he got sent off, which doesn't change anything. But Royer's put through, should have scored. They had big opportunities. And for a team, even let's say he doesn't get sent off, you got young center backs, like, you need to finish for them. You need to be able to create those chances.
And on the flip side, to go back to naivety, he needs to understand what the situation is with center backs. Aaron Long's out. They need you, man. They need you now, and they need you to not be suspended, and they need you to play 90 minutes in this game. Red Bulls and their young, hungry Wolves didn't get it done. Revs did. How about the rest of the East, though? Orlando, big win. Tesho, 1-0, just grind it out. Oscar Pareja knocked down Toronto FC. Look, no Nani, no problem. No Daryl DK, no problem. They're not necessarily producing goals, but they haven't lost the game, and they're second in the East. This is what this is what Orlando fans probably, like, dreamed of for years. Not to say that they wanted to have their best player out and have it not be that explosive, but just to have be, like, the sort of disappointing games be ho-hum 1-0 wins where, you know, it doesn't just collapse. Things aren't collapsing around you all the time. There's a structure. The structure works. They take it week to week. They're strong defensively. This is what Oscar Pereja does, and he's doing it yet again.
And this is why Orlando, I think, is still an MLS Cup contender. Because, again, like the Revs, you said it, they haven't hit form. Juan was out this one as well. We don't know what the DK situation is going to be. Pato's still out. And so this is a team that's getting wins without playing the soccer exactly how they want to. And that's awesome for this group. And they've got a ton of options across the field. Like Vanderwater comes on, he plays well. So now you've got three or four wingers that you trust. Junior Oso and Seba Mendes have been great. You still haven't seen Uri Rossell. Janssen got back from injury and he gets the start. So Schlegel can slide out left in this one. So you're talking about two or three deep at every position for a long term. I think the only big international loss for them is going to be Pedro Gallese for however long he would go for whatever's going on in South America.
But you have Schlegel, so you're good.
Yeah, you got Schlegel.
Like, you're fine.
The most clutch goalkeeper in MLS. So yeah, this was a huge win. It was also a big win because TFC beats Columbus last week. They get the result against NYCFC. So they're rising in the East. They're in your stadium, so it's like with the battle for Orlando. That's really how everyone thought about this, I'm assuming. So I thought this was a big win for them and a good performance, as you said. A solid professional
This is our city. We stay in the hotels here. We live here. This is ours. Orlando is ours.
And Toronto's like, yes, please. We'd love to go home if we could.
We don't want to be here anymore.
Also, my favorite moment of MLS this weekend, I know that everyone's going to yell at me for this because I rep Canadian teams so much. Jefferson Soteldo gets like pushed down by Antonio Carlos.
Yeah.
But doesn't complain for the call and immediately just chips Gallese. And it would have been a goal, but it was a great goal line clearance. I don't remember what defender.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am going to stand for this guy for the rest of his life because he didn't ask for a foul and played through that.
Well, the moment he came into the league and pulled his shorts up, you were already texting the group chat, being like, he's the truth. He's the truth.
I was going to say, I mean, Chris Mueller hasn't looked great this year for Orlando, and you'd think with Nani out that he would be kind of the guy that they would lean on for goals. So they need to find a way to kind of get him back in form. But I thought Tesho, for me, was kind of man of the match, dangerous. His movement is, he's a big guy, but his movement is excellent. Like, he was just a problem moving around, running unselfish runs, overlaps. I mean, of course, he gets the goal, right? But he could have had two or three more, actually. But he was just stretching that back line all day. And I think it's a question mark for Armas and Toronto a little bit, because they do try to press at times. And I think, you know, we've been going back and forth, and I think they've been going back and forth on picking their moments when they want to press and when they want to play out of possession. And the problem when they press up higher up the field is that it exposes Mavinga can cover space and get behind, but if you can drag Omar out, you know, there's some couple nice balls that get in behind him and left Tesho with some pretty good looks that, you know, if he had a better day, could have had one or two more goals. So but anyways I just want to give a ton of credit to Tesho, because I mean, like, we were talking about depth, right? One down, the next. I mean, he's a guy that I think is a super valuable piece. And I don't know. He was my man of the match.
Yeah, probably hasn't gotten the credit, because people, when Tesho has played, have said, dang, like, it's Daryl or it's this other player or it's, but he does all the right things. It may, that's not always the most efficient, let's say, in the final third, but yeah, you're exactly right.
He had the breakaway to kill the game and he did everything right and then just pulled his shot a little bit. Chances like that, if he scored chances like that, because as Kalen said, he does all the little things well and the movement for a team that has goal scoring wingers. So his role isn't totally to be a 20 goal scorer for us to win. But chances like that get you to 10, 12 goals over the course of the season. That's more than enough. But it's the 4 or 5 goal difference that is, you know, between 6 and 9 points in the standings at a position like that. And I think that's what you're looking for from him. But that's why he's also on the roster, because Pereja trusts him, knows what he can get out of him, and knows he can give them big performances in a game like this.
What's up, do we think, with Daryl? Because it's over for him at Brentford or Barnsley or another B team. No, I'm just kidding. It's Barnsley. We all know that.
You'd assume he's in the mountains right now in Switzerland.
Enjoying the Alps.
Up to that roster. Mm. Yeah. Maybe a little bit of chocolate as well. And he'll be with the U.S. through this whole Nations League stretch. I think the center forward position is his to lose right now. It's how it feels going into it, especially with the group they've called up. You would assume that by the end of this, Orlando has an idea of where he's going next. And so he probably should then get a break because that's his offseason. And he should go into preseason in Europe with whatever team he is going to join so that he has the best possible chance of winning the starting job or being an effective part of it. If that's not the way this lays out, I'm not going to be upset, but it probably wasn't handled as well as it could have.
What a fascinating moment for Orlando City, for Daryl DK, for MLS, because it occurs to me this should have been what, like, we expected this to be Jordan Morris. Like, switch out the names. Like, that's what we expected, right? Is that Jordan Morris would basically do, or something in proximity to what Daryl DK has done for Swansea, and then there would be this big sort of question mark. How would the Sounders handle it? Where would Jordan want to go? How would the U.S. national team influence it? What is his ceiling? What is the best landing spot in Europe? How much might somebody pay for him? But then it's Daryl, and all props to Daryl, because he's absolutely killed it. What would you like to see happen, Kalen? Like, when you, in your heart of hearts, for Daryl DK, not in Oscar Prejas, because Oscar wants to put him up the number nine, and I still can't believe that he's been saying things like that out loud. Like, I guess you have to have negotiating position, but what would you hope for Daryl DK?
Well, in the short term, I want to see him start for the U.S. men's national team and carry forward this good form, because it's one thing. Yeah, we saw him burst on at the end of last year, and then he goes on and gets this loan and then exceed expectations. But I want to see him carry it forward into the national team. And when I look at our national team picture, I just keep looking and I'm like, yes, talented winger. There are times, though, where we need to have that presence where you can hold the ball or just, you know, burst in behind or find an outlet. We're not the best team in possession in the world yet. I think we're still, our strengths as a national team and as a footballing nation, soccer nation, is going to be through our, like, work rate, our athleticism. We've got pacey guys around the field and technical guys too. But I think we definitely need, like, that kind of guy at the top of things. And I know the national team has sort of experimented with this false nine that's going to drop off and then play in behind to our wingers and spring them. But Daryl DK has shown the ability, you know, more so in MLS when I saw, because he was playing in a system that had a similar formation with these talented wingers, to facilitate, to hold the ball and then find nice little slip passes. So he has that understanding in his game to kind of play whatever style you want to play. I don't think it's just one style or the way that we saw him at Barnsley, where it's just kind of like, you know, smashing it up to him or finding good runs in behind or, you know, just pummeling balls into the back of the net. He can do a lot of different things. So I want to see him carry it forward with the national team first. And yeah, that might help drive the price up for Orlando a little bit too, if he scores a really nice goal with the national team against, you know, Swiss team or whoever. And you're like, all right, maybe that move happens. But I think for me, getting him involved with that group and seeing what it looks like with these other pieces, because I'm still a little nervous with the national team, just because, yes, we have players winning titles and playing all over the world, but I haven't seen the group really, like, go through it together and what it all looks like. And World Cup qualifying is going to be right around the corner. So this needs to happen now. And I want to see DK as a piece of that group. And I think this is the perfect time.
One, I'd say on the U.S. thing in general, there's going to be a moment in 2 weeks at altitude in the heat in Denver where there's going to be like a tough 10 minutes and we don't know emotionally how this team handles that. One of the things we've kind of looked over, as Kalen said, with everyone's winning things in Europe, but playing as a group. But for DK, as you said, with raising the price, the way he's going to play with the U.S. is different than the way he's played with Barnsley. Did I say the right
one? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that again is, if people are thinking about it and he plays well against Switzerland, and then he plays in a team that dominates possession, maybe against Honduras, and plays well against Mexico, if that's the way this all goes, I think that goes a long way to having teams that aren't 100% going to play against the ball and play direct say, yeah, this guy's worth that money and we want him in here because he can fit whatever style we're playing.
That's honestly, to me, the most impressive thing about what DK has done is that he came out of a college environment in which he was still figuring it out, developing, came through sort of non-traditional paths, and then hit two different teams that play very different ways in very different environments, like Orlando to Barnsley, the way that they play, the environment in which they play, what I'm talking about, weather, travel, whatever it might be. He's adapted to everything pretty quickly. Like, even if you're going to point to the couple months that Oscar kind of held him back in Orlando, understandable. He just became a pro. His adaption process has been quick, and he's shown that, as you said, Kalen, he can play in different sorts of systems and understand and grow in them. And we still haven't, to me, we're still sort of like, his line just started as a pro. He is still so much of an unknown in a lot of ways. I just can't wait to see what happens, one, in the national team setup, because where he's still pretty much an unknown there, and then whatever club he ends up at, assuming that Orlando City is going to sell. It is going to be fascinating to see what Darryl DK does. Big win for Orlando. Columbus needed this win they got against NYCFC. It didn't look like it was coming. Lesson for everyone out there. Like, if you're thinking about diving in and around the box against the Crew, just don't do it. Just stand tall. Don't do it. Don't attempt to tackle. Make them beat you. Make them find a way through you. Because if you give Lucas Arrayon
Johnson
the opportunity, he is going to do what he did.
Which one did you feel for him on, or both?
Both. He's just looking at, just being like, you got to be kidding me, man. Like,
the first one, he's like, had no idea what was going on, and the thing almost breaks the net. And
yeah,
there's
his run up is
face.
Like, he almost hits it straight, but it totally turns, and it was hit with such pace that if you take one step, I mean, I don't even think you could say it was cheating. The ball was just moving, and he took a step to the right, and it was gone. That was it. And then the second one was just absurd, just because that's a tough one because it's right on the edge of the box. So to get it up and down in that time, and it was like, if you watch it, and so I mean, they have great replays of it, but it goes, you know, the way it tops over and the top spin on it was just sick, just filthy. And you're like, what are you going to do on that? And I think everybody, you know, Sean most importantly, but everybody just had that look on her face, like, and even Zellerian, he like holds his hands up like the Jordan shrug, just like, I don't know, man, that's just how it goes.
Five goals in MLS this year for the Crew. Two of those are own goals. The other three are Zellerian free kicks.
Yeah.
Not only 12 players, I think, in MLS history have done three free kick goals in a season. Zellerian has done it now in, what, six games? For the Crew. I mean, the record is Sebastian Jovinko, and that he felt automatic, and his best was six, I think, in a single season. Of course, he got others in CCL and all these big high profile moments. Zellerian or Jovinko standing over the ball, Kalen, who do you want? Who would you take? Who would you say, yeah, you got me? I mean, there is some recency bias here because we just watched Zellerian do it. What do you think?
Come on, dude. Jovinko's like at his peak, probably the greatest player in MLS history. And could hit.
I'm just talking about a free kick. I'm talking about one.
I'm just saying,
free kick.
Go, Jovinko.
He has the most. Doesn't he have the most? Jovinko has
the most. Yeah, he has the most. He has the most.
Remember?
But Zellerian just getting going.
Didn't Jovinko fly back from Italy, come off the bench, and hit like a 35-yard one?
No, that was the one where it was like over the corner, and he like flicks it around the backside of him, and then like half volleys left-footed, top corner, and you're just like, this is just what? It was against the Red Bulls, I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was a 35-yard free kick.
They might have done that in that same game, too. Who knows? Zellerian, though, absolute just magician. The run-up's a little different.
I'm going to take it Blanco just because he never hit the ball with his laces. He would score like 35-yard free kicks with the inside of his foot. Just like, I don't know how he did it.
Just bizarre. Passing it in over
there was no smashing them. I don't think I ever saw the guy really smash it. He just kind of placed it from 35 yards out.
Perfect transition to the Chicago Fire. You're talking about one of, you know, I think you look playoff team.
You're talking to a diehard fan.
Yeah. Kalen. I mean, look, I'm
this guy right here.
I believe
wearing SKC today.
You know what? When Daniel Shaoui scores, you gotta bring out the Sporting KC jersey. Out of homage to Daniel Shaoui, and his form is getting much better. I love it.
It's his third goal in the season, right?
And look, he's had some opportunities to make it more, and it just hasn't happened for him. But three is enough for me right now, Daniel. Chicago Fire, though. First win of the season for the Fire. They knock off Inter Miami, who didn't look great in this one, but David Nskoki hit us up. He said, Andrew, we did it. That's right, David. We did it. The Fire won. We drink from the keg of glory filled with Malort. Hopefully he didn't take too many swigs from said keg. I watched this game with my boys, 10 and almost 7. Two quotes from the older boy sum up the game and season to date. The first, right before the free kick on which we scored, quote, why would anyone foul Chicago? We're not good enough to be fouled. We're not a big threat. That's tough. Wow. Tough from a babe's mouth. The second on the goal, quote, that was cheap and cheap works. Hey man, it doesn't matter. Whatever works in this case. And I thought Doyle, again, to go back to his columns, it's always great. He has been pounding the mental mistakes drum for a long time. And if the Fire don't step on rakes, they got a chance. And they didn't step on a rake in this game. And Rafa Wiki came out afterwards and basically said that and said, look, we didn't make a catastrophic error. And that's a big step forward. So congratulations to the Fire. Congratulations to FC Cincinnati.
But
they also won.
Okay, can I just say with Chicago, they have to take out their soul and the beauty of the game and lay it on a table to get through that. And I think John McCarthy was dealing with an injury and the goal, as David Sun so clearly put it, was cheap. It goes off his hands, off the post, and in. I think there was no ability for him to dive to his side. So great, but at the same time, you watch this team, which when they have that midfield three are fun to watch, creative, blah, blah, blah. Only one of them played in this game in Madron. Or sorry, started, and then Stojanovic comes off the bench. Chicago, you need to give me the beauty with the results. It can't be one of the other.
No. You don't understand the way this works. There's been very little of either beauty or results for the last decade for the Fire. So just one. That's the step forward for them. And that's what we were yelling about all last year. Like, if you could, look, take away some of the beauty. If you can win games or draw games in moments where you're supposed to and not hand points to the other team, that's like the foundation, right? You can't have the beautiful home that you can live in and maybe entertain during the playoffs in if you can't do the basics. And they did the basics. FC Cincinnati also working on the basics. But they got it done. They won. And they beat the CF Montreal, Club de Foot. And they came back to do it. It's their first comeback win in their MLS history ever. Which there's not that many wins to speak of, so that makes some sense. What there's
any
a,
depressing messages from young children in Cincinnati in the mailbag?
No, but if you are someone who listens to this show under the age of let's just say 15 in Cincinnati, and you have any verbatim quotes during the game you want to send us, we're always open to that. The post Cincinnati on Twitter did just throw out here, just in case, you know, you said it, Dave. Just start throwing darts, baby. Giorgio Chiellini, he's met with club officials at Juve. No decisions about his future, but he's speculated to lean toward Major League Soccer, and Cincinnati fans are rightly saying, why not us?
So let's just start here with it's Chiellini. I'm not the best with pronunciations, but let's get it. Just in case he does actually come to, I just want to state, and I think I've already said this on the show, so now they went outside Jeff Cameron, who's 35. I think Chiellini's probably a similar age because there's defensive problems with FC Cincinnati. And the Revs are first in the East, and they have three starting center backs they got out of the super draft, including John Bell, who was like in the third round. I am offended by the fact that FC Cincinnati didn't draft a single center back this year. None of them might be good from this class and are worth playing. But you are out here spending how much money on attackers, and then you didn't draft a single center back, even just on a flyer. I have no idea what's going on.
Is center back the problem for FC Cincinnati right now? Viasia, Cameron?
Okay, fair. But one, they had to sign Cameron because they didn't have any. Okay. And they brought Viasia on loan. We don't know if he's going to come back. And we also don't know that they're that great a pairing. Once again, Cameron was on the wrong side of a player who scored when they played that 1-2 and Montreal gets in and goes up 1-0. Great win for them also. Couple gifts on a couple set pieces from Montreal to get them through,
as well as the aforementioned Romel Chiodo.
This is like the Chicago theorem. These teams had not won a match this season. I don't care how it happens, and then you look at it, and they came from behind to do it. And if you look back the other week, they had the heartbreaking loss to at home, you know, to Miami in their, I'm like, Minnesota, man, in their opener. But like to come back from behind, I thought showed something from this group. And like the last goal was nice too. Good ball from Moderito. Yeah. The back line still has issues for, even when you look at what happened with the, you know, incredible miss from Kyoto, it's because the back line is all out of sorts as far as, are they holding a high line? Are they not holding a high line? Where are the outside backs? Why are they 10 yards behind the center backs at times? Then they stop running. And then, they need to continue to work on that for sure. But they did actually change the formation up a little bit and played Stanko. And they pushed Kubo up to more like a winger, which I think is a better starting position. I don't think Kubo is a center back or a holding midfielder.
The rest of his career would tell you that he is not a holding midfielder.
So we're seeing some progress. Changes.
You said it. Something is better than nothing. And there was a lot of nothing previously. Jurgen Locadia might have developed a taste for Skyline at like the very last second. Like, he came off the bench and Anders dropped in the chat here, and he's right. He was good. He made the right runs. They played to those runs. I mean, again, it wasn't pretty. He didn't have the beautiful game side of this, but like, he is physically a presence. He can get in behind back lines. And if you can connect once he is there, you can push up field and have some opportunities.
A rocket. Doesn't need a lot. And he hits a heavy ball for sure. The goal had nothing to do with that, It was sort of a gift on the on the goal line for him to head in, but he does hit a rocket.
That's some good, like, you know, like playground soccer stuff when you're growing up in elementary school, and like the best player is the guy that can kick the ball the farthest, and you're like, he can mash this thing. Like, we'll see if results come from that.
But captain at center back. Victor Wanyama almost scored the goal of the year on a bike kick going the other way. It was pretty epic. Didn't go in, but I'll remember it.
He had a bunch of header opportunities. Didn't happen for him as well. Tough one for Montreal, but a big one for Cincinnati. Let's get to the producer Anders reminder of the day. Late in the show, Rubio Rubin, 4 goals, 2 assists for RSL. They drew against FC Dallas. Have we done the whole, like, wow, Rubio Rubin thing? Because, wow, well, Rubio Rubin.
He did win goal of the week on that bike kick. I mean, I think that
might be goal of the year.
For sure. And I think that was the celebrating him because it was week two that he'd scored in. And he's now been the guy for RSL. We talked about it a bit before the season started. Bobby Wood's still coming over. They tried it last year with Giuseppe Rossi. We've seen it a bit with Justin Amirim. Is right now RSL's in this like, okay, let's try and rehab some guys. Let's believe in them. Let's bring them in here, give them opportunities because we believe the talent's still there. Rubin crushed it with San Diego Loyal in like a month and a half under Landon Donovan. And I know Landon spoke pretty highly of what he saw from him and that he could still play at a high level. And he's delivered on everything. It's goals where he's able to carry the ball from midfield. It's goals where it's pullbacks and he's in the right position. It's the bike kick. It's a lot of different ways. And I think the biggest part is to kind of like hold that center forward position to make Krylak Life and Rusnak and Miram and all those guys, Anderson, Julio, more dangerous. Because it's just, there's been a void in that space for RSL for like 2.5, 3 years. So he's giving them goals and he's giving them the performances to make everyone a little bit better around him. And it's exactly what RSL needed. They don't have the ability to go out and sign a big name player. They needed to find something under a rock somewhere, and they found it in Rubio Rubin.
I just, for whatever reason, as I listened to this, I was thinking of some of the previous players that were there, and like, I'm thinking of Sam Johnson and everything that happened with him. Like, this is not a risky move, but that's what RSL needed to do in their current state, which was go find a guy that, like, if it didn't work out, it was going to be okay. But they found somebody who was beyond hungry. If you look at or listen to Rubio Rubin and what he said in the aftermath of that, like, he took himself a big chance going to San Diego. But he got somewhere where somebody just, like, Landon Donovan just injected him with confidence, whether it be throwing him to the starting lineup right away, the way that he talked to him, the way that he treated him, and then the performance that came afterwards. Like, those are the stories I want more of in our little soccer culture. Not necessarily about rehab, but about people believing in players and giving them the opportunity where they can be their best self and then having that translate down the line. The more that
Mark-Anthony Kaye was a USL winger and now is one of the best center mids. Latif Blessing taking an expansion job. That's what Bob does. That's what Bob does best. That's what Tab's working on in Houston. And then, sorry to go off here, but we've had a few years where coaches come out and go, we're not good enough. That's like borderline unacceptable in MLS anymore for a coach to come out and say our talent is not good enough. You need to have the ability to make that talent good enough. And we literally, the best example was Anthony Hudson in Colorado, who the moment he left, they went on a run and almost had an historic run into the playoffs.
Okay, okay.
And now they're one of the best teams.
But Gus, you're adding Mark-Anthony Kaye to a midfield with Atuesta. And yeah, you get Latif.
Atuesta wasn't a starter when he got there. It was Benny.
It's a different thing to add into a team where you add in Carlos Vela and Rossi and all these players.
Yeah, those guys are good.
Okay, then to be like, oh, yeah, I mean, RSL still might not make the playoffs. But where are they right now?
They're right under. 1 point behind.
Yep.
Okay, so they're in the mix.
But they've only played they're in.
Again, they've only played 5 games.
Yeah, okay. Points per game they're in. Yeah, we don't know. And also, Bobby Wood's coming in. We don't know what happens with Rubin. Maybe everything Freddy Juarez has done and Landon did, maybe it goes away if he doesn't start Rubin once Bobby Wood comes in because he feels like he has to start Wood. Whatever it is. But again,
as a club, to put yourself in position for, let's say Bobby Wood wins a spot, whatever it might be, to put yourself in a position to then be a team that everybody picked basically last in the league to just be competitive and in the playoff race, which is where they seem they'll be, that itself is incredible. I even look at the Sounders. Like, Nuhu was a project. Now he's one of the best center backs in the league. Like, we knew he had a ton of talent, but Schmetzer gave him opportunities. Yes, it was outside back. Now it's in that center back spot. He's there. Alex Roldan, people slagged him off all last year. He had an issue in the playoffs. He's back. He's one of the best right backs in the league. Kellen Rowe has been bouncing around. He comes in. He looks incredible. Like, It's just the idea of seeing guys and regard and their talent and saying, I think that they can fit and I think they can be better here and we can give them an opportunity and confidence to be better than they have been at their last stop.
And or honest, I give credit to Rubin too, because when you're a young prospect like that and you have a lot of hype and you're in with the national team and then all of a sudden it kind of comes crashing down, it's hard to build yourself back up. And I think there's a lot of players. I mean, you mentioned Houston. Derek Jones has been really good coming back up and getting an opportunity. And I still think for young American players or in between young American players, getting to some of these quote unquote smaller market clubs where you're going to get an opportunity to play and they kind of need to try you out in different ways is a really good landing spot. I know everybody still wants to kind of rush to the coasts and go to some of these other places, but if you're really looking for an opportunity, I still think those are the places that are still making room for a lot of young American players to get, or maybe people that, you know, didn't work out in a different situation, because there are so many different formats and styles of play and, you know, managers that might not rate you, and just getting a different picture and then just playing, like just getting games. You can see Rubin growing as well, where it's just like that first touch he takes where he's coming across Hedges there,
sets him up,
and then just finishing it. I mean, his technique, both feet, he's got it. So he's definitely finding his form.
And RSL's covered this a bunch, the media out there as well, but they sent a few players on loan to that club in Austria. I think it was the third division, that people who were former RSL employees and whatever and Americans were running. Andrew Brody, two huge starts in place of Aaron Herrera, now gets a start at left back. I think Ruiz was part of that who in my mind is one of the best young central midfielders in this league. So they found different ways to kind of help players develop, because Real Monarchs, they do a great job there, but they found other ways for someone in Brody's situation who was a little bit older to say, okay, this isn't what works for you. Let's challenge you in a different way. They send him there. He gets converted to that position. And now he's a starter for them as well. They got the results with Eric Holt getting the start in place of Justin Glad. Like, they have, again, because of the confidence and the way they've done it, and to Kalen's point, they need to give guys opportunities. So it's a great place to be. They've been able to use that and create a culture where they've been able to get results.
That's cool. Speaking of young players getting opportunities, our 22 under 22 player of the weekend is, could be, let's say, Tanner Tessman. Nobody said Regista yet. Here we go. Back deep line, just spraying. Just Tanner Tessman spraying. His range of passing is really, really good. Of course, it's a 2-2 draw with Dallas and RSL. Dallas at the bottom of the Western Conference as well. But shout out to Tanner Tessman. A nice performance in this one. And I think that's a good
spot.
And
Ryan Hollingshead, the big goal.
Dude, Ryan Hollingshead's a baller.
He's a baller.
We should just all just come to grips with the fact that
They got Krylak, though. You don't want to get Krylak.
A lot of people get Krylak, though. Doesn't matter. Hey, you could be LAFC in your prime. You might get Krylak. You know what I mean? Like, he comes out of nowhere on you.
Everybody's gotten Krylak, man.
Yeah. Okay, Nashville with a nice win against Austin. Are the wheels falling off for Austin, or is this just a little reality setting in?
Yeah, I just think you're starting the year on a road trip. I don't think any team is dominant throughout this type of run, but they know who they are, and it feels good. I tried to spur the Ake Loba rumors for them last week. It just feels like they need a little bit of someone who can carry them in tough moments that they don't have on the roster. Not every MLS team does. But if you add that with the cohesion that they have as a group, they could be dangerous. And I don't know. They're kind of sitting on that line.
Yep. Look, Jared Stroud's been great. Shout out to Rob Stone, who is the biggest, clearly, Jared Stroud fan that the world has ever seen. That's true. I'm slandering you. I don't know.
Baby Bowl legend.
Have they sent you a custom jersey though?
They have not. I have no value.
Right.
No one does things for me. But I will say this: the youngest Stroud is currently with Red Bulls U23s.
So
there's three Strouds in the system.
A lot of Strouds. Like that. Sporting Kansas City, as we said, nice win there. We're going to talk about the center back carousel, but I think we will hold that for another day unless you guys feel strongly. Do you feel strongly about Sporting Kansas City? They are second. We talked about them second in the West. Ilya's playing a little bit back there. Let's do it.
I don't think it's long term. I think that's a fix for now, and I think that's a opponent-based thing. Vancouver, obviously, last week worked with San Jose as well this week. San Jose not dominating possession against you. This isn't long-term for them. It's good that they have it in their back pocket, but Ismat Marin has to get back. That's the big one to me. I liked what I saw from him. It was only about a game and a half. If he can get healthy, I think then that puts the other pieces around it where he can support another center back and you can really find out the right pairing for
it. Just feels like a broken record to me ever since Beasley and Knight got separated for them. Like, I don't know. It's Ismet Marin and who? Is it Ismet Marin? Like, that's where Peter Vermees, I feel, is right now. You have Puncic, you went out and signed him. You have Fontas, who's still been around on TAM. You've got the, you know, Graham Smith, who's played games. Now you have Ilya coming in. Like, I just, there used to be such a sense of...
No, Kaveh Rod.
Yeah,
the Rod see, brothers,
there we go. A sense Let's of permanence go. For Kansas City on the back line, and they could build everything off of that sort of foundation of just knowing exactly what they were going to get. And they shuffled around outside backs and it was fine. And the goalkeeper changed and Tim Melia had a couple of big moments in this game as well. But it just, I'm not sure that Peter knows exactly what he would want to do in a perfect world either. And for them to be second in the West and have that still be the situation, that's pretty good. That's pretty good for them. All right, let's get to the mailbag. What do we got in there, Dave? Anything good?
Yeah, I had one right here. I think you kind of hit this, but Malik on Twitter says, can we seriously start considering Nuhu as defender of the year?
I was before I even saw this tweet, I was going to throw that out there.
Oh.
I mean,
are you guys there for it?
I'm definitely there for it. I don't know if there's a... Defender of the year is a funny one because it takes a while to sort of materialize. You really need to see long-term stability and sort of like... probably dominance from a team overall and then have like sort of the guy. I'm not sure Nuhu is... quote unquote the guy on that back line. I mean, there's a lot of shine to go around right now.
He's a media darling.
He is a media darling, and that matters. And you know, on this show, I'll tell you that these are marketing campaigns as much as they are anything else to get people to vote a certain way. Does Nuhu Defender of the Year, does that ring for you guys? Could you see that happening? Can we start it here?
I think he's been great.
He has been really good. There's no doubt about that.
And when you're not giving up goals to run a play and it's been solid. I don't know. I think it's tough because I still think there's a gap when I look at like the best individual, because it's an individual award, right? So it's not a team award that saying the Sounders have been the best defensive team. Now, oftentimes you do see it go to the best defender on the best team. I still think of guys like Miles Robinson, who I think, has taken... I think will play a big part throughout the rest of the season. Already is, of course. Can he work his way? Be motivated to see if he can work his way back into the national team picture because he's left off.
Okay, how about this?
Let's Zimmerman's say, always up there. Yeah, Long's Walker. Out now.
Yeah. I thought Antonio Carlos could get a lot. Yeah. He probably should get a lot of play here. But again, on the marketing side, will he have some of the like marquee moments and be talked about in that way? Not sure Philadelphia has a guy there that will get that sort of. I am on the Mumbaizo train, but I don't think an outside back can win this award. It's literally impossible at this point.
What New if York's... Hollingshead scores like five more bangers this year?
Here for it. I'm here for golden boot slash defender.
You think he could make the history? You think he could push it through? Yeah, again, they probably have to be...
With Doyle's push over the top, I don't know.
You probably have to be a top three defensive team in the league, and right now Dallas are last in the West. So I don't think you have to be good. As a team, and then you have to be good defensively. I don't know.
Can we also just make sure we don't get confused here? They're 3 points off of being sixth in the West. It's still very early.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think we're doing this a lot already. Yeah. Armis out, Armis back in, NYCFC up, NYCFC down, Galaxy here, Galaxy not. Like, everyone take a breath and relax for a moment. I'm just throwing it out
there. All right. Anything else in here before we get out of here?
We got Bearded Jack, legend, who says, with the league continuing to expand, should MLS start expanding ways players are recognized? Example, doing two teams of the week, one for Western Conference teams, one for East, or an offensive player of the week, defensive player of the week. More work, baby. More work for you. Let's go.
I don't like the two teams of the week, personally. I think I think the one team of the week is right. But I do like offensive player of the week and defensive player of the week. That's an interesting one to me. I think that does give an opportunity to sort of shine and track a little bit on the defensive side, where it just seems that those guys, they just kind of get lumped in together. You almost saw it with our Defender of the Year conversation. Like, it's hard to really put a finger on exactly who was the best. And I think shining a light on those performances would be cool. But I don't think you go multiple teams of the week. That cheapens it to me. It's 11 players. Who was the best? If you're in there, it's a huge honor. Find your way in there. I think I would stick with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else? We good?
All right, you're good.
All right, man. It's fun to get back. You know, every time I take time off, I'm like, I go into it, I'm like, man, I need this time off. I'm a little tired. Like, I got to, just kind of like put some gas back in the tank. And then I get on my first extra time back and I'm like, let's go. This is fun. Nice to you, man. I like this. Yeah, for 1 week. Like, ah.
We be screaming, let's go. Kaylin going, we missed you,
played,
you, man.
You played too much golf.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was
you, my. You had too much golfing, man.
Yeah, that's, my golf was pretty ugly. I did, was disappointed, though. You know, you see when guys are out now, even with just a little injury.
By the way, I noticed Mindy was like only posting photos of you on the course. There was no swing captured.
That's not true. That's not true. There was one boomerang. There was one boomerang that did not show the result of said shot.
Yeah, but I was going to say, boomerang's not enough time to
exactly,
know.
Exactly. Now, one thing I am a little bit disappointed about, you know, you see guys like sprain their ankles now. And the whole team takes a team picture. They've got like the jersey held up. There was not much solidarity from the extra time crew for my chosen week of vacation. But I'll let that pass.
I don't think they normally stand in solidarity when you go to Mallorca on vacation or whatever. Oh, it my is. God. I think that's only when people get hurt.
I wasn't in Mallorca. I was in Missouri. It's not the same thing. All right, that's it
well,
for
it's
us.
It's your version.
Yeah, that's
version,
true. It's beautiful here. It just rained all week. It's like Mallorca and. I don't know if Mallorca ever rains there. 401-206-0-MLS, xdrive@mlssoccer.com. Let us know what you're thinking. Remember Wednesday, Zach Steffen interview on Club and Country, and Brian Ching on Tuesday on the call-up. So go check those out. Dave and I will chat with you tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern on Twitter Spaces at MLS handle. We will run through a bunch of guests, talk about all 27 teams in MLS. If you have something in that you want us to talk about, hit us up on Twitter at Extra Time or at our personal handles. Enjoy your week, everybody. We will see you on, I guess, Wednesday and Thursday, bonus week. Adios.